Hello, we are Emma White
and David J. Lilly.
We're both jewellery designer makers who spend every day surrounded by shiny things.
We're both passionate about jewellery
and love learning all we can about jewellery making and sharing what we've learned with you right here.
Perhaps you're a jewellery lover or a creative type, or you spend your days at the bench like we do.
Whichever it is, we hope you'll enjoy our sparkly chit-chat, our silly stories, and our thoughts on living a creative and slightly dusty life.
With a few laughs along the way.
You can find our podcasts on all your favourite apps, including, of course, the biggies, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts.
So if you want to know who we are and share our passion for all that glitters, then stay with us for the next 30-ish minutes.
This is
Emma
and David with Little Gems on Jewellery
and Life.
Hi, David. How are you today?
Hi, Emma. I'm good. You?
Good. Yeah, I'm fine, thank you. Fine. On this crazy roller coaster with you.
Non-stop for the next 3 weeks.
Yeah, I know, it's bonkers, isn't it? But it's so much fun. I'm really enjoying the process. Are you?
I am so glad that I decided to take part, you know, or decided to put myself forward to take part, I should say, because it was such fun to do, and everybody within the whole production company, etc., was so supportive, and it was lovely to meet you in particular, but meet the other jewelers as well. I mean, you and I have obviously, you know, bonded more than we have one another with some of the others, probably because we're as bonkers as one another. It has been, fantastic. No, you're not nearly as old as me, hun. You can't win on that one.
Yeah, it's been fun. Of course, what we're talking about is our participation on All That Glitters.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that TV competition / talent show format show. If you've not seen it, a bit like Bake Off, but for jewellery makers.
Yeah,
so that's our crazy adventure. So we've come to talk today a little bit about what we've made and the stories behind the pieces that we designed and made on the show. So do you want to go first or shall I?
I'll go first, thank you. I won't be the gentleman and let you go first. I'll launch in myself.
That's okay by me.
The brief on the bestseller for episode 3 was a pearl chain necklace, which we were allowed to interpret in whatever way we wanted, and you and I interpreted it in very different ways. Obviously, mine was very heavily pearl-oriented and yours was very heavily chain-oriented. But mine was inspired by the necklaces that my grandmothers used to wear, in that they both wore three-strand pearl necklaces, and they'd each had them made for them throughout their lives. Both of them were given tiny single-strand pearl necklaces when they were born, as christening gifts, and then when they reached their majority, as it used to be called, at the age of 21, they each had a second strand bought for them, and the first strand made larger, so they could wear the first strand again, and then wear it as a two-strand pearl necklace.
Nice.
And then when they got married, their husbands each bought them a third strand, and so they each had three-strand pearl necklaces. It was something that it was relevant to both of them. I mean, they were both Victorians, and they had, they both had Victorian parents, my great grandparents. And I think it was very much a kind of thing at the time within, certain parts of society.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it'd be fun to kind of emulate what they'd done, but, put a twist on it. So rather than just having three strands of pearls, I would play on the idea that these strands became bigger over time.
Mm-hmm.
So what I did was I started producing one strand of pearls that then became two strands that then became three, and then moved back down to two strands to one.
Okay.
So in the middle at the top was this tiny little circle of pearls as a kind of emulating the child's pearl necklace, though it was more of a kind of Barbie size child's necklace than a real child's
more
necklace.
About Barbies later.
Absolutely. And then the next one was a bit bigger, and then the biggest one obviously was the longest strand of pearls. And then because we had to integrate gold and silver into it as well, I then used kind of loop in loop or foxtail chain, which I created from the gold and silver wire that we were given. Like everybody else, I was drawing it down to make it fine enough to give us the length, because we were it had to be a certain length, this necklace, didn't it?
Yeah.
I can't remember how long.
It was like 8 inches it had to be.
8 inches. Oh, that's right. 8 inches for chain, yeah. Didn't it? And then the pearls, yeah. Whatever you wanted. Yeah.
A so minimum of 8 inches.
Yeah. I think mine was probably the shortest of all the necklaces, because that was obviously my design concept, in that I was keeping it high towards the neck, like an original pearl necklace would have been worn. Sure.
Nice.
So yeah, so then I just did my foxtails and kind of loop, and then wrapped around another loop and wrapped around another loop. And then to get the length, I used a wooden mandrel with holes in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I drew the chain through the holes, getting it smaller and smaller.
I didn't know you'd
to get
done
it
that.
Tighter and tighter. Yeah, that's how I got it to the length.
I see. That's clever.
My chain wouldn't have, if I just looped it and looped it, it wouldn't have been long enough.
Yeah. Yep.
But by pulling it out, I could draw it out and make each loop longer and thinner. And so the whole thing. And so, again, I wanted to make the chain relevant to the pearls, obviously.
Yes.
So I strung the pearls on an amber silk, which on the show looks like bright gold, because they've ramped the colours up on this show dramatically. We all look incredibly healthy, I thought. I thought, my God, look at me. I'm so healthy. Rather than the pallid English pallor that I normally have. But so because I had gold and silver, I thought I need to integrate the gold and silver to make it look like it's integrated with the idea of the amber between each pearl, because you've got amber, silver. So that's why on my necklace, the chain part, each chain is silver, gold. So the idea of that color change is throughout the entire piece. And amber was the closest color silk that I could get to 9-carat gold.
Yeah.
So yeah, nice. That was that. Thank you. That was the concept behind mine. Very. It was taking tradition but subverting it. So you know, it was still emulating, I suppose, in not a clear way, but a fairly obvious way, that this is, you know, a small pearl chain necklace. And what about you?
Lovely.
Tell us about yours. What's behind the thoughts behind yours?
Well, I was inspired by the actual history of pearls themselves. So when you know, pearls were traditionally, way back when, were very elitist, and they were considered to be, at some times in history, just were only for royalty, but certainly for people of means, because they were, you know, extraordinarily rare. So that kind of led to them being treated in a very kind of traditional way for a very long time, you know, and if you think back to sort of iconic pearl necklace moments, Breakfast at Tiffany's. And then something really interesting happened when pearls became cultured. A cultured pearl is kind of like a farmed pearl, where little kind of plastic beads are popped into oysters, who then do their job and cover it all up with their beautiful luster, and out comes a pearl. So they became much more accessible and much cheaper. And interestingly, and this is the bit that inspired me, interestingly then they became much more interesting to a lot of the big fashion designers of the time. And all of a sudden, there were people making whole outfits out of pearls. There were, you know, massive, they could be different shapes, they could be different colours. And, you know, there was all, there was all these, like this sort of explosion of creativity happened around pearls. So there's two very kind of different kind of trains of thought or design experiences around pearls. So that was what sort of inspired me. So I had this idea of kind of having these kind of two lines of history kind of weaving around each other, if you like.
Fab idea.
As part of this necklace, with the pearls kind of being sort of like, oh, but always coming back to the pearl. So, you know, changes, weaving, weaving, back to the pearl, changes. So that was the concept behind my pearl necklace. And also I felt quite strongly wanted to do something quite contemporary. I also didn't want to have a clasp because I wanted that continuity to be unbroken. So I wanted something that just went over the head.
Very limited, I thought.
But obviously we were quite limited by the amount of metal that we had. So I had to draw my metal down.
How fine did you draw it?
Really, really finely, to give me the length. I drew it down. Oh, now you're asking. I think I drew it down to about 0.7.
Oh, okay.
Of a millimetres.
Yep, you did.
I needed a lot. I needed like metres. And my links were very fine. It's a funny one, because actually, from a technical point of view, that was probably one of the best executed pieces that I'd made to that point.
Oh.
I share a studio, or shared a studio until quite recently, with a chain maker. So I was quite used to watching him work. I did things like I coiled my wire around a mandrel, like through two blocks of wood, to give it real tension so that my links were exactly the same length and the coils were perfect. And one of the technical challenges I had was because the wire was so fine, there was spring in it. So it's how to keep that coil together.
Yeah.
And keep it tight in order to be able to cut through it so all those links were the same. So I kind of came up with this idea, which I tried and it worked, where I kind of bound it really, really tightly around the mandrel, and then I stuck it together around with paper sellotape.
Yep.
And then pulled the paper sellotape off. So that was holding all the links together. If that hadn't been there, they would have just all like sprung out, you know? Even though I'd annealed that metal, it was still, because it was so fine, you just couldn't completely get the spring out of it. And then I actually like bound it up with some more paper sellotape, and then I burned it off. So as I burned off the paper, the links annealed, so that when the paper was all burned off, I had this like really, really perfect little spring.
Yeah, not surprised.
And I was really chuffed with that, and I was really gutted it didn't end up in the edit. I was like, oh, but that was so good, and there was fire. I set fire to stuff. You didn't show me setting fire to stuff. Anyway, there's always a little bit of a pyromaniac in a jeweler, isn't there? Gotta enjoy the fire. So yeah, so that was kind of cool. I did have a bit of a flap right at the beginning, which again didn't get seen because I needed to use the draw plate to get the wire down. And I'm not strong enough to pull 9-carat wire by hand.
It's crazy.
I can do
hard.
The silver, but not the gold. It's really, really hard as 9-carat. And I know some guys were just yanking it through, but I just couldn't do it. So I was gonna use the draw plate and the draw bench, sorry. And there was a bit missing. I used it once and then I went back to use it and it was missing, and I was running around the workshop in such a flap looking for it, like getting people to look for it and all this. Anyway, I'd actually picked it up and taken it onto my page. Proper perimenopausal moment there. So yeah, so I went and then I went back and I was like beside myself, thought I'm gonna cry, I'm gonna really, oh my god, because I just can't do it. And I tried to pull it by hand and I couldn't do it. And then I went back and I looked and I thought, oh, I got it. I was like, oh god, I'm really sorry, I've got it. And I went over and I was like, really sorry, I've got it. Everyone stop looking. So yeah, quite embarrassing actually. But there you go. Such is life. I do it all the time in my own workshop. I'm sure I probably spend half my day just looking for stuff that I've just had in my hand 5 seconds. So yeah, so that was what I made. So I made this pearl necklace and I was really chuffed with it. It had originally, the links that I twisted were oval. The judges were both said to me, oh, you know, this is looking lovely, blah, 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 as they do, you know, and they just walk around. And I was like, oh, I'm going to twist it. And I remember at one point, and he was like, you're going to twist it? I was like, yeah, yeah. And she was like, oh, okay. And she kind of went away, and then I just soldiered on, you know, and I twisted it. And you know, the criticism I received was that they weren't even, but they weren't actually supposed to be even. But anyway, but I kind of, you know, I did take what they said on board, and I should have made it a lot more obvious that they were not supposed to be even, rather than it just looking like maybe I'd just not done it very well, which was kind of how it was painted on the show. I was actually really, really pleased with it. I really felt like I'd nailed it technically and I hadn't had any disasters. And I was like, yes, I've nailed that. And I was really chuffed with it. I really liked the design. And then, oh dear.
Well,
it did not
I think
go down
very
well.
Had possibly opposite reactions to what we expected, because I didn't expect mine to be as well received as it was when I'd seen what other people had done. Of course, others let themselves down by actually, you know, just sticking on the pearls on the wax cotton,
not
actually addressing half of the brief, which was it's a pearl chain necklace. It's not a chain necklace with some pearls, you know, slung onto it. So they let themselves down that way, and that way I did well. Yours was, but you know, for some of them, they decided they were just going to attach the pearls on the string that arrived on, and they got the critique, you know, and then the penalised. So, but anyway, shall we move on to the bespoke? The bespoke was
a
charm bracelet, wasn't it?
I love this brief. It was Shima and Ian who had the most amazing, powerful story of infertility, IVF. Yep. I was very moved by their story. Mm. And I think there's lots of their story that felt very familiar to me in lots of ways, from, you know, my own experiences, friends' experiences, people around me, you know, obviously being a mum, and you can't imagine really some of the stuff they went through.
Yes, indeed.
It's just, you know, very strong couple, very, very lovely couple. I really was kind of wanted to refer back to have some Middle Eastern reference for them because all the names were Middle Eastern. I kind of settled fairly early on in my thought process on Fatima's hand, which is a symbol of protection. So, you know, the piece that mm-hmm. I made was the one with the little hand with the heart, and then the pebble, and then the sort of angular gold.
We obviously know what Fatima's hand means, stands for, because you just told us. So what do the other two stand for? What do they represent?
So the pebble was symbolic of the beach, where a connection to the beach, and they'd got engaged on this beach in Dorset, I think it was. So it was a pebble that I collected on my... I always collect beach things whenever I go to the seaside. The pebble I used was one of my own beach treasures, but to reference back to their experiences and their emotional connection with the beach. So that was kind of them as a couple.
Yep.
And then the hand was obviously them as the five fingers being the family of five, being slightly cupped around the love heart, which was the family. So that was kind of protection. And the gold charm, which I don't think actually featured much in the episode, that was a reference to the constellation, because the little boy that they lost was called Atlier, and that is a the brightest star in the sky in a particular constellation called, and I might get this pronunciation wrong, Aquila. So I actually looked at that constellation, and I drew it, and I drew a 3D representation of it, and then I carved that into wax, and I carved the star into the wax, and then I cast that into gold. And then I also used enamel to like bring out some of the colours. So the blue in the star was for Atlier, and the obviously I did the red enamel on the heart for the family, and then I kind of like sprinkled the kind of blue and aqua enamels on the pebble to be like, you know, the sea and the waves washing over the pebble.
That's lovely.
So that was the kind of the thought behind that one. Tell me about what you made, David.
So my one didn't go to plan, but I wanted to work with the fact that Shima liked things that were chunky. You know, that was part of the brief, was that she liked things that were chunky, and I would simply work with the idea of the three children. So Altair was the first one, and like you, I went with a representation of a star, because the star also represents hope. And so it was the hope for something better after the, you know, after they began the IVF treatment. So that's why I thought that the star was very apt for Altair, in that he's the name of a star, and the star represents hope. So that was him. And what I did for the three charms, I started with the same shape. So I took the metal and I melted it down and I put it into an open cast as a disc, because I wanted to do different things with the disc. The disc didn't have to be completely circular. Okay. Altair's was, because it was about the circle of life as well. So it had a star in it, had a little circle in the middle.
Okay.
And it was circular in shape. And then it was a star, pierced star throughout. Then we had Faris. Didn't we? And Faris, his charm was all about courage.
Yes.
Because one of the things about Faris was it's a knight as well. Mm-hmm. It's a representation, or represented by a knight, you know, whether he's on his charger or not. And I know that Tian also took that reference with her kind of knight's helmet. I was looking for, you know, what was a representation of courage that wasn't just something which was more akin to Europe when it's a knight, in that, like you, you know, these names were not standard European names. I didn't want to necessarily kind of muddy that idea. I discovered through a lot of research this international symbol of courage, which is these, again, a little circle, not in the middle, but at the bottom, and then these kind of three sets of wings that come round it, which could almost be seen as flames, or they could be seen as wings. They can be interpreted as they want to be. So that was the one for Faris. And again, cast the same way. This time I left it in a more organic form. So it wasn't completely kind of circular. And that was very much, you know, the slightly bigger than Altair. Again, because she said she liked chunky things. And then I moved on to Lyra Joy. I thought it has to be Joy. You know, the joy of actually having, you know, their third child. That's when things went downhill, because I had never used 9-carat gold before the way I was using it. I'd only used 9-carat gold before, I think, in episode 2, the first time I'd ever used 9-carat gold. And so I tried to melt it down, and the starting thing, just as soon as I tried to use it to actually roll it into a thinner disc than I could cast, because you know what it's like when you cast metal. If you just put it in an open cast, it will become a little blob. It'd be a really beautiful little kind of bun, because that's the shape that it naturally takes. And I obviously wanted it thinner and larger. And this 9-carat gold did not like being annealed, and it didn't like being hammered down to it, and it became very kind of cracked around the edge.
It's hard, isn't it? It's hard to work. You could have maybe dropped a hammer on it when it was hot. That's what I did to make my heart.
Oh, that would have been a good idea. But then it was hot in the cuttlefish, so that would have made it smash the cuttlefish and everything.
Yeah, yeah. Made you a complete have to do it really carefully.
Yes. I just thought, I'm just going to have to roll with the punches here, because it's not going to be what I wanted to be. So I got it as thin as I wanted, and it looked a bit like when you're kind of rolling out pastry, and it's just getting, it's all kind of cracked at the edges.
Yeah.
You know, that's what was coming out like. I thought, fine, I will texture it so that it looks like this is the finish that I wanted. And I started creating, again, the pierced out imagery, which is a person with their arms up that is the underside of a heart. So the heart is the heart, the top of the heart, the indented point, and it comes around the kind of blossoms of the heart. And as it comes down, it's a little person underneath with their arms outstretched. So they become the bottom of the heart.
Oh, nice.
And again, this is a symbol that I discovered that, you know, that was taken by a lot of places, a lot of people, as representing joy. And I thought, well, it does, because it's this lovely little person at the bottom, you know.
Yeah.
So that's what I did. And then, of course, as I was soaring or piercing this heart out, these little kind of indentations on the side of the piece where it was a bit rough had come all the way through to where I was piercing, and I hadn't realized. And so there's a little bit that fell out.
Oh,
I couldn't find it. I couldn't find
no.
it at all. I couldn't find this sodding piece of gold that was about a millimeter square. And so, well, I'm just going to have, and this was the final piece I was working on, and we were running out of time.
Yeah.
Thought, fine, I'm just going to have to do it. And then I decided on a double length chain so it can be worn as a necklace. And then I couldn't work out how to make the chain work as a necklace. And I was getting frustrated by that. So I thought, I'm just going to have to string it the way I can string it. And I also wanted to put the rainbow, because they loved rainbows, on the chain, with the idea that it will rub off over time. But but it's like everything, you know, things dull over time, but you don't forget what was there.
Oh, that's nice.
You know, our memory dulls.
Uh-huh.
So the idea was that the chain, where it's in contact with clothes or with the arm, the rainbow colours will wear off. But where it isn't, they're still in there. So you've still got the memory of the rainbow. So, that was the concept behind my charm bracelet.
Yeah. Do you mind if I just talk, David, about the Barbie hand? I never actually mentioned the Barbie, which
I think you have to talk about the Barbie hand.
I know. So obviously I cannot finish talking about the charm bracelet without mentioning the Barbie.
Yeah.
So the Barbie kind of came about because I originally was going to carve the hand in wax. You know, I was messing about with that, and I was a bit worried about the time frame of that. It turned out okay, actually. I did a couple of trials and they were all right, but I was like, I don't actually have time to do this. I was already doing one wax carving. I began to think about other ways. And then it was Mabel's birthday, and she got given about 6 or 7 Barbies, because she'd suddenly got into the Barbie phase. And I'm looking at these Barbies, and I thought, God, they're really beautifully executed, these Barbies. I started looking at them, and I looked at her little hand and went, oh. It was a bit of a light bulb moment. So she had 2 that were the same.
Uh-huh.
So one of them travelled to the workshop with me. and suffered a terrible industrial injury.
Indeed.
And I gave it a little go, and I was really, really pleased with the result.
Mm-hmm.
So it caused a lot of hilarity on set. There was a lot of talk of Bionic Barbie.
Yep.
And Terminator Barbie.
Yep.
And, you know, the inclusivity of Barbie generally. So her sacrifice was very much appreciated. It worked very well, and I was very pleased with the result. And I now have a whole collection around hands and being held and all the emotion of that. So
that's lovely.
The story with the Barbie. Yeah.
That's brilliant.
Yeah, I haven't actually watched the episode with Mabel.
So that's episode three, documented.
Yes.
So
yes.
Who are we going to give shout outs to this week on Instagram? Who do you want to shout out to?
Shall I go first? You can go first. That's fine.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, go for it.
So this time I want to talk about Mark Newman, an Irish jeweller, relatively new jeweller. So it's Mark Newman Jewellery, JEWELLERY, on Instagram. And he has really come to the fore in the last kind of couple of years. He studied jewellery in Ireland, where he's from.
Mm-hmm.
And he is about to show at the Goldsmiths Fair this year for the first time.
Is it week one or week two, David?
I can't remember if it's week one or week two. I haven't actually seen the listings for weeks now, and I can't remember where he is.
No, I can't.
I'll have to find out from him. I don't think he's
put it in the notes.
Yeah, I don't think he's even said on his Instagram feed. Let's have a look to see.
Because there's different jewelers in the first week to the second week.
There are. Yes, there are. No, he hasn't even said on his Instagram feed which one he's in. Which,
we'll look it up.
It's a bit daft. But yeah, we'll find out. But he's definitely worth doing. I mean, his jewellery when he was working at uni was all about, or it was his concept behind it, was circuit boards.
All the way
that all the lines trail on the circuit board and taking that into a kind of more three-dimensional form. So yeah, that's going to be my shout out. So check him out, Mark Newman Jewellery on Instagram.
Okay.
And who's yours?
Mine is, it's an account called Bear Accessories. So that's a bear spelled B-A-E-R-E accessories. And Bear Accessories is actually a children's clothing company run by a friend of mine, Elena, who has been a good friend of mine for many, many years. She actually came to my jewellery classes a long time ago. That's how we got to know each other, but we've really connected and she still comes now.
Lovely.
And Elena, really sadly, you know, to tie in with the story, she lost her firstborn child a day and a half after he was born.
Oh.
It's a very sad story, and I don't want to, you know, I don't want to tell it wrong. Yeah, she had a little boy called Fraser. They knew before he was born that he was going to be very poorly. Sure enough, he hung around for a day and a half, and they lost him. And heartbreaking. They have gone on since to have two more beautiful children. And Elena is really talented. She makes these beautiful clothes out of organic cotton. And her kind of USP is that she embroiders little faces on the legs. And they have little animal faces on the sleeves and on the legs. And they have long ears that hang up, but they face towards the child. She also donates a portion of everything that she sells to a charity that is around, you know, the reasons why she lost Fraser. So do have a look at Elena. Beautiful, beautiful kids' clothes. She's actually just launching into some adult wear. Also, I have a jumper prototype.
Right. We're done.
Do we want to do Technique of the Week thing?
Technique of the week. Wow. What's technique of the week? Tell me.
Well, it was one of the things that Sam suggested, and I thought that's quite a good idea.
It's nice to get suggestions from listeners, isn't it?
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, should we just very briefly talk about casting?
Yes.
That would be the obvious one, wouldn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. You go on. You go off and I'll chip in.
All right then. Fab. So we've had a suggestion from somebody, which I thought was a terrific one, to have a little technique of the week. So obviously our technique of the week has to be casting.
It has to be casting.
Now, when I say casting, I'm actually talking about small scale production casting that you can do fairly accessibly in your own workshop. So I'm not talking about the big scale, and I'm not even talking about lost wax casting and vacuum casting and all that. I am talking about cuttlefish casting and Delft clay casting, which were the two casting techniques that we used in this episode three. Yeah, I personally love it. I think it's great. I think it's a really good way to venture into three dimensions fairly easily.
Yes.
Cuttlefish casting is something that I tried at college, at art college, and have taught my students. It's really good fun. The cuttlefish is like slightly soft, and you can press things into it, you can carve into it, and then you basically, it's a bit more complicated than this, but ultimately you pour molten metal into it, and you end up with the metal that is the same as the negative space you've created in your cuttlefish. And the lovely thing about the cuttlefish is it has its own texture, which for me is part of its charm. Some people cast things and then file all that texture off. That's fine. That works. Do you want to touch on the Delft clay, or do you want me to carry on?
Yeah, just quickly, because we're yakking for a long time today. So no. Delft clay is also known as Mansfield sand, and it's a sandy clay type material. They also call it something else, and I can't think what that is.
I've heard it called red clay. I've heard that before, yeah, but I've always known it as Delft clay. But
you use it in a metal container, which can either be a little aluminium cylinders or steel shaped, kind of brick shaped pieces. If you want to do something bigger, you create the shape that you want to cast. This time, what you do is you fill half of your container, whether it's your little cylinder of aluminium or bigger in steel, you push the piece into that until it's halfway down, so that there are no undercuts, there's no kind of areas where something is sticking out over the actual top of the clay, like if, for example, the bow of a ship sticks out of the water. You wouldn't want that. You'd want the whole lot down in it.
Yeah.
You then cover it with talcum powder, which I seem to remember Bonnie loving doing. Then you put the other mold, and then you kind of brush that off, put the other mold on top. You then fill that with your Delft clay. And this you hammer in as you had the first half to make sure it's really nice and solid. And once you've got that done, you then gently pull them apart. You take out your original. You then put in the little areas for the sprue. So you carve out an area where the metal can pour into your shape. Stick it back together, melt your metal, and pour it in. Now, the one thing that you do with Delft clay that you don't do, or invariably don't do with cuttlefish, is you also put air holes in. So you'd have little tracks running from your shape where the metal's going to pour in through to holes that you pierce through the clay. So that enables any air in there to come out. And
I do that in a cuttlefish as well.
Do you? You're the only person I know who does that. I've seen so many people not do it.
Out to the edge, just like, just drag them.
Yeah, it's a good idea. It is a good idea, but I've never seen anyone else do it.
Oh, sorry,
yeah,
mate.
And then you just pour in the metal, and off you go. And just quickly, I know we're rambling on, but just quickly, I want to talk about some other casting techniques that I've used and loved and used and wasted. There is water casting, where you can drop molten metal into water, especially if it's got ice in it. That works really well.
Yeah,
I have tried baked bean casting. That was not much use at all. I've tried casting into shreddies. See if I can get a shreddy shape. And that was a waste of time. But the one thing that did, I know, I thought, why not? The one thing that I did find successful and created a whole collection around was casting into spaghetti.
Oh, so I love that you do that. It's so
cool. Standing on its end, pour it in. And of course, some of the spaghetti, you know, disappears and some of it doesn't. And you get these interesting shapes. So, cool. Casting.
Lots to play with. Lots to play with. We'd love to hear how you get on with that. If you want to leave us some stories in the comments, we'd love to read them.
Yeah, we definitely would.
Fab.
Right.
Oh, that was fun, David. Thank you so much.
It was.
Lovely to recap with you. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Really nice. What fun that was.
We'll see you soon then.
Speak to you soon. Bye.
Well, take care. Bye.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed the episode and come back to us in another couple of weeks for the next one. In the meantime, also thanks to Alfie Amadeus for the amazing track, Optopi, which does our theme music. See you soon. Bye-bye.